So where's that story? Do you have a story that I can reference?
No,
So I'll just
you're
let
gonna
you
have to
go.
trust me.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller. This is episode 177 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Today, let's talk about Airbus and China.
Airbus in China?
Hey, you wanted to talk about
I did. I'm
it.
excited about Airbus in China. So, fun story. A couple of weeks ago, there was chatter about Airbus possibly moving some of the A380 component production or even potentially final assembly to China. And that's always a slightly weird thing, just moving stuff like that into China, because, I mean, y'all remember from my story about the ARJ how that product is basically old blueprints of other things that were US products that were then taken to China for final assembly, and China eventually took the blueprints and decided to make them their own. And so that has happened over and over again with many technologies. There's sort of some intellectual property respect there, but not a ton. And ultimately, it seems like to me, like bringing the A380 in there would have been sort of a major concession in some ways, but also giving China more of the sort of work associated with any of these products makes China happy. And Airbus kind of needs China to be happy because right now, neither the A320neo nor the A350 are certified in China. And there's a bunch of planes that have been built that are sitting at Airbus and can't be delivered because they're not certified by the CAAC. They're not like legal to fly in China. So there's a bunch of planes that Chinese carriers haven't taken delivery of yet. And it's an interesting sort of conundrum of what do you do in that situation? Do you, and also Airbus needs more sales of the A380. So if it's being partially manufactured in China, does that induce Chinese airlines to order more? So like all that sort of just coming together is interesting to me, especially in the couple of weeks since that happened. France's president, prime minister, what's Macron's title?
It's president, I believe.
President, okay. So he went to China, had some conversations with various people. Airbus agreed to increase the final assembly line in Tianjin for the 320 family from rate 4 to rate 6. So they'll do 6 a month now. And it seems like it might have worked in terms of loosening some of the challenges for the CAAC to authorize the aircraft, because today, this is Tuesday? Monday? This is Monday, the
Today's
22nd.
Monday.
I'm so confused by that sort of thing. They, one of the, I think it's Xiamen Airlines 350s moved at Toulouse, and it moved over to the delivery center. So that's an indication that they think it might be getting ready for delivery potentially.
Oh, wow.
So that's sort of shake up in just the complexity of the business and the international relations and all that crap around it. It's like, oh yeah, we bought an airplane. No, well, you did, but we still need the governments to get along and all these other things to happen to be able to use it is interesting and challenging and crazy. And it looks like the 380 thing may have, talk about it, and who knows where that talk will go, but may have proven to be unnecessary in terms of moving things over there to get new orders going, because Emirates finally agreed to buy 20 more planes. And they agreed last week to buy 20 more A380s starting in 2020, I think, for the deliveries. And that's the latest from them. That's 20 firm plus 16 options. And this is sort of closing out the back and forth between Airbus and Emirates and the rest of the industry for many, many years now, or not, well, yeah, years-ish, but certainly many, many months about whether that deal would close and whether the 380 line would continue to operate after, the 2020-ish timeframe. So Airbus still needs more other airlines to buy it, but at least for now, just with the Emirates order, they're good into like 2025, I think. So it's not completely dead yet. And it's, I don't know, I have all sorts of questions about the new A380 order, with Emirates in terms of price and just how good a deal they got. And, is Airbus choosing to only lose a little bit of money every time in hopes that someone else will come along and also buy some more and like sort of keep this product alive for another decade just in case it proves that we really do need the jumbo planes because the airports get crowded enough? Or is this just, losing a little bit of money? Or maybe they're making a little bit of money on every plane. It's hard to know. But Emirates drives a hard bargain, and Emirates had all these crazy demands, not crazy, had serious demands though of wanting to sort of guarantee resale value and long-term production and all these things, because without that, it didn't make sense for Emirates to continue investing in the product. So
Do you think that the Emirates order long term is actually viable? I mean 25 more planes. Where are they going to put them?
So some are fleet replacement.
Okay.
Which is right. They're going to retire old ones. Some are for growth, which is interesting because Emirates in general growth has been slowing, and they are already taking new deliveries and parking some of them, and have slowed some of their new deliveries anyways of the 380s. So. It does seem that bringing, an A380 to, not Marrakesh, but Casablanca, I think, had 380s at one point. They put them everywhere. It's basically half their fleet. So,
but these planes are going to trickle in at such a slow pace that you never know what the markets can be like by the time they start getting, they say the first 10 are going to be fleet replacements, and then the next 10 are going to be growth. You're going to adjust that accordingly. So you never know what's going to happen. I mean, they could all be fleet replacements in 15 years from now.
Well, yeah, I mean, 10 because, or 6 because that's when the deliveries are scheduled unless they defer them again, which would be basically crushing to Airbus because they got nothing else to fill the line with. But yeah, I agree. They could become more fleet replacement, which is fine. It's still though. I mean, you look at it right now, there are pseudo fleet replacement already, and they're not able to retire enough of them yet because not enough of them are old enough to be retired. So there are challenges within the sort of product and their total capacity and what are we going to do with all these planes. I absolutely agree. But I don't know what the situation is going to be in 5 years.
But could this be one of those things where they've said, yeah, we'll buy 20 more, and then in 2 years from now they go, well, we don't need all these. We'll convert these to 350-1000s.
They could, I suppose. I mean, that's would, again, be crushing to Airbus, right? I mean, But
in light of the Boeing deal, right, it at least gives Airbus some future business with Emirates.
Yes, absolutely.
And I
don't know that that was ever really in doubt. I don't think Emirates was ever really at risk of going single supplier.
No, but at least there's something on the books.
Yeah, that's fair.
And what does this mean for potential other A380 customers, say BA or...
Gosh, an interesting choice, Stephen. Whatever would make you think to bring that one up?
I don't know. Prompting by you.
Rumors are out there that BA is and IAG are considering increasing their 380 order book now, or buying some additional planes now that, again, they know that the line is going to be out there for a few more years. I'm not entirely sure I believe it, but if you're looking at places where the 380 makes a ton of sense, Heathrow's probably one of them. And I'm not, having said that, you have to also figure what routes does it make sense where BA is running multiple dailies that aren't already the 380, and where can they grow and sort of, increase that capacity, and maybe San Francisco?
See, my guess would be Baton Rouge, Heathrow.
You think they get Baton Rouge in? You think they're going just to try to preempt Emirates and get there before the Dubai route comes in?
I mean, they already have Nolens.
It's true. And Austin, and they're bringing Nashville online. So
Nashville's online already, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
At some point this – is it last year? I thought it was this year.
It was last year, I believe.
I could see them doing an A380 to like Houston because they have multiple frequencies there. And they have an A380 – there's another A380 gate there. Maybe JFK. Do you think that is a possibility?
So currently no gates.
Mm. And really, there's almost hourly flights from JFK. I don't think they need the capacity there.
Mm.
It's a legitimate question in terms of where does capacity trump frequency at that point, and just how many seats are selling on any of these flights and peak season versus off peak and yada, yada, yada. But, Dulles takes the 380 from time to time. It had it last year. I took it out of Dulles in March. So I think now it's a pair of 747s, but it comes and goes.
And I guess some of the Asia routes would probably be the same. Like, there's probably a high season for...
Yeah, and that's the thing. You can move it high season between the different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And BA is pretty good about adjusting capacity like that. Even to New York, where I was trying to find 747s for a variety of reasons on BA, I was finding a lot of 777s in the winter. Where they reduce capacity.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing to keep in mind here is that BA has a ton of 747s that they're pulling out. So they need something to replace those. So it'll really just be where 747s are going today.
I mean, they're not going to fly an A380 to Denver.
Maybe not, but there's other Joburg, Cape Town. I don't think all of those have been converted to 77s yet or 78s.
Yeah, Joburg and Cape Town are doing enough sort of onward connecting traffic with the Comair stuff to local other regional destinations and things like that, that I think they need the capacity.
And you've got, also got like Hong Kong and Singapore. They're not, some of those are still 777s.
Yeah. Let's switch a little bit and go to American.
And I'm just saying that the new route was announced in August, Foz. I don't think it started operation yet.
Oh, I must be confusing that. I must be confusing something. Yeah, I must be thinking of New Orleans then. I thought Nashville had already started.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's switch to AA. They've announced they're going to have a LaGuardia-Chicago shuttle, which, I mean, they already kind of do have a shuttle, but now this is going to come with the beverage.
They're going to call it that.
Yeah, they're actually going to call it that. What do you guys think of this? Is this a smart move? I mean, it's kind of taken United to task.
Well, is it though? I mean, because the AA has a much larger presence at LaGuardia to begin with, so I think they appeal to the New York flyer more, whereas United is really carrying more of the Chicago traffic because they have a dominance in Chicago.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think United's presence at LaGuardia is essential. They actually have more flights than American right now to O'Hare. They have one more. It's 15 versus 14, last I checked. So, but they essentially, they have those flights and they have the Houston routes. And a couple flights to Denver is United's presence, and that's it. Maybe one or two Cleveland still.
Yeah,
right? So, and American has a few other destinations. Like, I think they still have Nashville on the books. They still have a random hodgepodge, but they gave up a lot of their slots at LaGuardia to Delta to get DCA, which I still think was a stupid trade on American's part. But
that was US Air. That was not American.
I still have to commit. Anyways.
I agree with you.
So given that, right, American definitely is still seen a little more as sort of New York City business traveler in some ways, but especially at LaGuardia. But, you know, United's approach is, right, but look at all these options we have at Newark and, you know, all the advertising about how easy it is to get to Newark and blah, blah, blah. So
the other thing I would say is right now, LaGuardia-Chicago round trips are down to $80. I'm not sure this is a great business decision to throw more capacity into this market.
So, again, they're not changing the capacity, right? Same number of flights that they've had, same planes that they've had operating for months now. The big difference is free drinks and dedicated gates.
I'm not sure what that really buys them.
The goal is to get them more business travelers.
Yeah, but does that really actually get them more business travelers?
I have no idea. And I agree with you. I'm somewhat skeptical, right? The idea that a business traveler is going to switch their business to American because they get a free beer in the back. You know, it's a long enough flight that depending on how good you are, you can probably get four. But
and you have a dedicated gate, Seth, because we don't have these things on our pockets anymore that can tell us which gate we need to be at.
It's true. Well, yeah, and LaGuardia is so big that in the American terminal, to walk out to the far end of the pier to your gate that's not the one right by security is going to take you 3 minutes instead of one.
Well,
O'Hare is probably the problem at that end. Right?
In their defense, they operate out of three piers at LaGuardia now.
That is true.
I've just avoided – maybe this is just to enhance the experience at LaGuardia because it's so crappy for people. And, you know, like this is penance for
them. What I'm actually somewhat skeptical of is the value of the shuttle proposition in general. And someone was online mentioning this when I wrote about it. But, like, when I flew shuttle DC LaGuardia back in the day – I mean, I had a time where I left my office at 12:02 at 40th and Lex, hopped in a taxi, pulled into LaGuardia at 12:20 without a ticket, and still made the 12:30 shuttle.
Yeah.
And that was at the Marine Air Terminal. It was on the Delta shuttle. My buddy, who is of a Muslim-sounding name, did not make the flight because they couldn't get the TSA clearance in time. That was awkward. You could do that sort of walk-up last-minute thing. I definitely see value in that context. But the other thing that the shuttle brought when it originally existed was, even on the cheaper tickets, relatively full flexibility. Right? You had a ticket for the shuttle, so whenever you got there, you just got on a plane.
Yeah.
You got on the next one that you had on yours or the next one that had seats available. Right? There were all these little things about the shuttle that sort of made it great for business travelers, and I'm not sure that a free beer is that.
Yeah. Well, and now, if you showed up 20 minutes before your flight, you'd still be stuck on the Grand Central Parkway.
Yeah, maybe.
Depends on how good you are at jogging if you can get out.
I agree with you, Seth. I think for me, if I was a business traveler going back and forth between these two places, like, it's not enough of a benefit. If you told me I could just walk up and I had a ticket on a shuttle that day and could just get on any other one, that's huge. That'd be big.
Right. That's the flexibility that the business traveler needs. And right now, all of the airlines, to the best of my knowledge, none of them are doing that anymore, right? They all have their $75-ish same day change / standby / haha, we screwed you fee.
Yeah. I agree.
So that's one of the factors that just makes me wonder about the value of shuttle in general. And the other thing to think about is it does have some added complexity of extending that product off the East Coast. It's longer segments. There's challenges with flight timing and LaGuardia airspace delays and all that other stuff that could make customers frustrated from time to time. And, you know, on top of all that, like, does calling it a shuttle get you anything? Are you really giving these passengers something different?
Yeah.
So, and Delta pulled out of their shuttle on the West Coast, right?
Yeah. They've said, forget it.
You know, giving everybody a free granola bar turned out not to be so valuable to them.
And there they had the opportunity, you know, at Seattle to dedicate, you know, two gates or three gates to a destination like San Francisco or LA, and give the flexibility again that we're talking about, and really actually make it a value add type fare for people who are doing that kind of commute, especially to Seattle, like Seattle to San Francisco tech hubs. I could totally see that being a benefit, and it doesn't seem like they really cared about that. They just wanted to see if they could entice people with a free beverage in the back.
Yeah. I will say my record for Delta shuttle between DC and LaGuardia was three beers. I sat, this is back when they were running the MD-88s on the route, excuse me, and I sat back by the galley, like at the rear door, and there's that galley right there. And I did that because they'd always use stairs to exit at LaGuardia. So you could walk out of that, and because it was the Marine Air Terminal, you basically walked in at ground level at baggage claim, and you usually got out before the people sitting in row one. And so I spent a lot of time back and forth on that shuttle. There was a lot of optimizing going on. But as we sat down, I said something to the flight attendant, joked, haha, this and that. And as she started to pull the card out, handed me a beer, and then came back through on my, because that seat doesn't get first service. So she snuck me one to start, came back through, gave me another one at the regular service time. And then as they were picking up the trash to finish, gave me one more to finish and carry the empty off the plane with me. So, like, you know, the 32 minutes of airtime, I did three Sam Adams.
Wow.
Crazy. Ordered and consumed sequentially. This wasn't the just give me a bunch of them and let me see how many I can drink game. So if any of our listeners have, you know, bested that, we'd love to hear your story. Or I would anyways. I can't vouch for the other guys.
Well, so let's talk a little bit more about Delta. They just made a big announcement that they're going to be cracking down on emotional support animals, and which for you, Seth, is the beer. So I don't know.
you think I need a note from my veterinarian saying that the beer is helpful?
Yeah, it's helpful and safe and won't bite anybody.
It won't bite other passengers?
Yeah, exactly.
Just to find a very interesting veterinarian to make this one work.
Woof.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think, I wrote about this already a couple times. I'm a huge, huge fan of this change.
Yeah, me too.
I think this is nothing but good. And there are a few people who are concerned, frustrated, whatever, saying they really need it and they can't find clear rules of what that means or any number of other things. And what about last minute travelers? Because it requires a 48-hour notice and maybe that's not illegal. And I don't care. Someone else is going to file the lawsuit and I'm sure it'll happen and we'll see where it goes. But the situation got out of hand. We've talked about it far too many times in the past and not nearly as many times as we could have. And I'm so happy.
Yeah, I think I made a comment on Twitter or something. I was in San Francisco and there was a guy with like a dog that had a service animal vest on it, emotional support animal. And it was like fighting another dog. And I'm like, I don't think this is how this works. Like, this isn't right. And there's people who legitimately need a service animal to function, to perform their daily tasks. And I'm totally okay with those folks bringing a dog on a plane. I am not okay with people who just want an excuse to bring Fluffy with them on a vacation.
For free.
I have no sympathy.
And have them out in your lap instead of in the holder. And I'm with you on that 100%. There's also, it's important to remember there's two different categories, right? There's service animal and emotional support animal.
Yep.
And both of them have rules, but the service animal rule is must have a note from a vet saying it's properly vaccinated and it has to be relatively current.
Yep.
I guess 12 months. The emotional support animal also requires a note from a doctor, like a human doctor saying that it's necessary. So that's an interesting caveat or quirk of the rules, and also still requires the veterinarian's approval and all that spit. The other thing that is somewhat significant is Delta has finally decided you can't just declare anything an emotional support animal. It has to be one of several specific types of an animal, like it's basically dogs, right? They have a list of things you can't bring. My personal favorite line in it is the collection of different wild fowl that are no longer permitted.
Hey, I have a picture of someone with an emotional support parrot. So
yeah, well, and I'm not sure how parrot fits in the fowl category, but like ducks and geese and turkeys are out. So
I just, and I don't think I can bring my emotional support snake anymore.
Snakes, spiders. People were saying, well, what about scorpions? Because they're arachnids, but they're not spiders. And I'm sure that those people are right, but I kind of also want to smack them.
Have people lost their bloody minds?
Listen, as you've met this community, you tell people this is the rule, and they will find the one thing that is clearly was meant by the rule, but wasn't appropriately addressed, and exploit the hell out of it.
What about my emotional support Care Bear? Can I bring that?
I think that's
you can bring as many stuffed animals as you want.
Okay, perfect.
I travel with a stuffed animal, you know that.
Yeah, I do. CRX.
That's right. It's in your Eeks. He's very specific about mispronouncing his last name.
Eeksney.
But yeah, I mean, also, there was this silver glider, something. There's like some sort of mini possum. Is it something like that? There's just like, all of a sudden you start to see some of these things. I'm like, I didn't even know these things existed. And apparently people are like carrying them on planes and making a big deal out of it. So
sugar gliders.
Sugar gliders, thank you.
Which people owning those as pets is kind of hilarious. So anyway, next up, what do we got? Oh, Delta is also expanding flights to and from Amazon.com cities. So the news here, the
potential new cities, right? The potential.
Why? Yeah, potentially. And they're adding flights to Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, because that's where Amazon Prime Air is based. And so they're going to increase service there.
Also, you know, it used to be a Delta hub.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, Amazon just bought another 200 or leased, you know, long-term lease or bought 210 acres at CVG.
Wow.
To grow their cargo operations there.
And they're going to add some more service between Cincinnati and Austin, because Austin is where Whole Foods is headquartered. So, yeah. They're also going to use some larger airplanes on Austin, Los Angeles, Milwaukee, Nashville, Phoenix, San Diego, out of Seattle.
And they claim they're also taking Boston up to 113 departures by the summer.
Wow. And supposedly they're bringing back Delta One to Seattle, JFK.
Yeah, but only like one flight, right?
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Which, it's so random. It's like, let's make them all Delta One. No, it's not going to work. Make them, none of them Delta One. All right, just give them one flight.
If they pick the good one, maybe they got the flatbed until we swap it.
Well, that probably has more to do with the international connectivity, right? The morning flight that connects to the international bank. It probably has something to do with the lack of available aircraft for them to do more routes and more of the flights as well.
Don't bring logic to this.
I'll go back to my corner now. I'm sorry.
No, the only thing I would say is, yes, clearly that's part of it. You got to, in some ways, I wonder though, Delta has all these 752s, and yes, they've configured them in ways that are critical for their operations, but they could arguably convert some, you know, throw the business, the Delta One seats in there, throw the Diamond seats in, right?
They could.
There's an expense there, but it's not massive in that they already have the frames.
Yeah, but part of the challenge they have is the bulk of the frames they have that are not with the Delta One configuration are the 12-door configuration versus the 10-door configuration.
Okay.
So operationally, it makes it a challenge because you can't as easily swap.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I don't see. Explain.
The back would be a very different config on the two different variants.
Okay, so you can't have as many seats on board or whatever.
Well, it just becomes an option. Like when you have something go wrong, because these are planes that are 20, 30 years old and things go wrong, subbing it becomes a challenge.
Okay. Having a plane where you can get the same amount of seats or the same config in the back, finding one of those planes, you're saying, is hard sometimes.
Like an analogy would be going back to, you know, think of an old Continental 35-seat 764 needing replacing a 20-seat.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Yeah.
Alaska has announced and shown off some new uniforms, and they also repainted their first A321 from Virgin America.
And they announced their paint field routes.
Yeah, I think, is the 321 a repaint or is it new delivery? I thought there was a new delivery 321 and then a 320 was in for repaint.
Oh, you know what? You might be right. It might be the newest delivery A321 is what was painted in the Alaska colors, or that mix, hybrid colors. And I saw it at San Francisco when I was leaving a few weeks ago, and it's pretty neat looking little plane.
Okay, so hang on. I'm looking at a picture now. It's the most West Coast livery. It's not an actual Alaska livery.
No.
I mean, it's an Alaska livery in that it's, you know, whatever. It's an Alaska Airlines airplane. But first of all, the plain white tail on that livery is stupid.
So looking at...
But beyond that... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Looking at air fleets, they haven't had their last delivery of a 321 was back in December.
What's the number on it? 924?
925 VA.
That was delivered in December?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one that's painted in...
Most West Coast.
Most West Coast.
Yeah, it was delivered to Virgin America and then transferred on the 11th of this month when they got their operating certificate.
I agree with you.
I hate that livery. I mean, the livery is fine, whatever, but the blink tail bothers me.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not a fan. But on top of that, they also announced new uniforms. And I think the new uniforms look okay. Let me see if I can pull up a picture here so I can talk about this with you.
But I like how they're rolling them out to avoid the AA debacle.
Are they doing that? Phases?
There's only for like a month or two, only like 100 people are wearing them.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I think like looking at I think for the dresses for the flight attendants, I think it's a good look. I think I think they're gate agents or maybe they're flight attendants and gate agents. The suits for the guys looks okay. It's almost JetBlue-esque, I think. I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, the thing I like about it, and I'm clearly not qualified to comment on fashion in any way, shape, or form. So
me either, really. I don't know.
Because of these comments with like a large block of salt. But I like the sort of the accent color curve across the front of the women's dresses.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Provides it like in the way it swoops and like narrows and then expands, it provides sort of a sense of motion in my mind. So in that regard, I like them. I find it, other than that, the sort of three-piece suit option for the vest for the men is a thing flight attendants do, but I would think it'd be uncomfortable and hot as a flight attendant and not nice. And I also really don't care very much about flight attendant uniforms as long as the crew is happy working.
Yeah. The tie's cool. The multicolored tie. That's kind of cool. I like that. But anyway, and on top of this, they've added the Payne Field routes. So Payne Field.
More than originally expected.
Yeah, so Payne Field sits, north of Seattle-Tacoma area? It's kind of on the north end.
Yeah, it's up where the wide-body plant is.
Yep. Alaska said they're going to start a number of routes. So what do we got? We got Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Orange County, Phoenix, Portland, San Diego, San Francisco, and San Jose, I think.
Yeah, all West Coast plus Phoenix and Vegas, right? Yep. Which plays into the most West Coast theory.
Yep.
Speaking of the heinous livery, it makes sense that that's what they're going to go for. The number of routes versus the number of departures they can run has me questioning things. And maybe it's start to see which ones get traction and then up those and drop the others.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think if your goal is really to try to be the convenient business travel kind of operation, you'd want to run three or four a day to three cities instead of one a day to nine cities.
Yeah.
So, and you know, United is starting up. I think they indicated San Francisco and maybe Denver or something like that. And they're going to do like a couple to each.
Yep. Six daily flights to each, or six daily flights total to both.
Yeah. So, right, like two or three, you know, two and four or three and three, whatever it is. But that'll cover your morning. If you do three each, it's morning, noon, night to each place. There's also like between all that, the airport's full already. It hasn't opened yet. It's full.
Well, so the interesting thing is that no one's flying to Chicago.
Where Boeing's headquartered?
We're Boeing's headquartered, and this is Boeing's largest factory.
Yeah.
Details.
Again, logic. I'm sorry. I'll go back to my corner.
I mean, it's a good point. I wonder, can the gates handle 737s? I couldn't tell because SkyWest is going to be, or Alaska Horizon is going to be flying E-175s.
But I think a 175 could do Payne to Chicago.
Yeah, it could.
It probably could. But the other thing is, is it only going to be 175s? I don't think they continue to say all jet. Mm-hmm. They haven't said any aircraft types.
Gotcha.
So, you know, instead of proudly all Boeing, Alaska Airlines is now proudly all jet mostly.
Kinda. Sort of.
Kind of, except for the Horizon Q400s. did we mention they finally got a new CEO?
Oh, no, we didn't. But they, yes,
in a recent episode, we were talking about which one was going to apply for the job. They got a new CEO. Good luck, buddy.
Dang it.
Yeah, surprise! But yeah, I think it's going to be all jet, but they haven't said it's only going to be E-75s or if they might bring some of the mainline stuff up there. It's actually an interesting question of, is that the right market for 319s or 320s?
True.
Some of the it's a little more demand, but not full on 738, which is their, you know, as far as Alaska's concerned, is a jumbo.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but like, I think Boeing might have a fit if, well, I mean, even if they bring Embraers, Boeing might have a fit.
Well, maybe not, depending on how that deal works out.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's true.
But like, can you imagine like flying a Airbus aircraft and next to the factory to take employees? That would be
no. Get it right, a C series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it and wasn't going to mention it, but it definitely has the range, and it's the right size probably for that market.
Hey, sometimes you just got to right size the plane.
Actually, speaking of C series and that debacle, something. Today, news came out that the E2-195, the new Embraer, they are increasing its official range based on the engines being more efficient than they expected and during the certification testing, which apparently brings it into the same classification as the C-Series and like potentially being in the midst of this stupid battle. I don't fully understand the details of the story, but that happened, and I read some headlines that were interesting, as you were.
Let's see here. We've got, why does your United flight attendant look so unhappy? This was an article on, I believe it was Bloomberg, or no, it's Inc. It's on Inc.
Written every 18 months, whether they need it or not.
Yeah. But I think it's an interesting question because, you know, they announced the flight attendant, union, I guess, merger, coming together,
right.
But that still actually hasn't happened.
Right. It's scheduled for October of this year, assuming and it's based on the company getting the software, like the new scheduling software operational.
Yep. And so I think that's the crux of the argument here is it's disappointing for the flight attendants to not.
It's still taking that long?
Yeah.
Well, part of it was that they were complaining that the Continental flight attendants are getting more seniority quicker. And a lot of it was in regards to international flying. But, and Seth, you might know the answer to this. I thought that some of the newer 78s that were coming on board were going on the United side, not the Continental side.
They were until the 77Ws came on, and then those were transferred over and the 78s went back, I think.
Okay.
So the 77Ws are definitely going on the United side, and I think they moved some of the 78s back as part of that. That happened at, like, you know, June last year when that's all. Was it June? Was it longer than that? Whenever the 77W deliveries started, a bunch of that stuff. Or way longer than June last year, but yeah.
They were complaining about San Francisco in particular, and there's not that many 78s in San Francisco right now.
Aren't there, though?
Paris.
Paris, Tel Aviv. Any going to Asia?
Yeah.
Seoul. And Chengdu.
Right. No more Xi'an or the other Chinas.
And Sydney.
So that's five we counted there, six maybe?
But compared to Osaka. Osaka would be the other one.
Okay.
But at one point it was Auckland, which is no longer. Taipei. Taipei ever 7-8? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
But there was Guangzhou, which is gone.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some routes that have disappeared. I can understand the concern. I also, like, it is in the nature of flight attendant unions to be like, we need something to bitch about to keep the company on their toes.
Yeah.
In some ways, and when you know, oh, we need better balance of XYZ. Remember that the flight attendants bitched enough about seniority and balance of crew that they got the 763s and 764s swapped at Dulles.
Yeah,
a couple months back. So it can work.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like at least with you know Steve and I's recent experience, you know, it used to be the Continental side had much better flight attendants, but now even they have become just as apathetic as the United ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't win.
Nope.
No.
Last up, the speaking of United routes, San Francisco, Tel Aviv, and Newark, Frankfurt have been announced to go to 77W land. So they'll be 77Ws on those routes. I think San Francisco, Tel Aviv is short term, right?
Yeah. As currently loaded, it goes into sort of later into the year, but not sort of. It seems to have a switch back to a 78. after the end of the summer season, and I'm not sure if it's IATA summer season or normal summer, but it does currently have a switchback planned. And again, that always subject to change. The interesting part about that is that the significant increase in capacity there times well with LL's announcement that they're going to add service at some point. And some point in Q4, we didn't give it a specific date, but Q4 is when the LL service starts up. So, interesting.
Yeah.
I think
what Foz and I were talking about was, you know, there's been rumors of another route coming to LAX.
Right.
But no one really knows what it's going to be.
Right.
So we could pontificate that for a couple of minutes.
Yeah. I'm actually just intrigued by the way, you know, potential aircraft routing across San Francisco and Newark via various cities across the pond. Right. You can do a San Francisco, Frankfurt, Newark, Frankfurt, San Francisco, or Newark, Tel Aviv, San Francisco kind of. I don't know the timing, but theoretically that kind of routing of an aircraft could work.
Yeah.
And this is something that United did shortly after the merger, and, you know, fewer out and backs and had their aircraft doing more circuitous paths. It's great for fleet utilization. It's great for, you know, aircraft, for the economics of the aircraft, but it's really risky if a plane gets out of position.
Well, especially unless you put a spare at Newark and San Francisco,
which is expensive.
Yeah.
And you can do a half, right? I mean, I want to say Continental back in the day had a half spare. They had like a 777 that was always, there was always 12 hours of scheduled ground time for one 777. And it was a hot spare, but it was a half. It didn't have a full 24 hours. And the theory was, I think it was based in Houston, but if they needed it, they would swap one of the 73s going up to Newark and move it there.
Right.
So they could do it, and United could do something similar. It's harder with the two airports being, you know, 6.5 hours apart or 6 hours apart instead of four. But
seeing how many spare wide bodies are sitting on San Francisco on any given day?
More in the winter than the summer.
Even in the summer, there's some. There's more than one.
Yeah, but those used to be mostly 747s.
Yeah, but now it's going to be a mix of, and as the 777-200 retrofits come back, it'll be a mix of those and the 300s.
Yeah.
And I you know, what's weird is, like, they have these 77Ws doing Chicago turns, like, every now and then. Just, like, random one-offs to Europe or Asia.
Yeah, and one did Houston-London a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's kind of random because, like, I'm thinking for those, like, if something did go wrong, there is no spare. Potentially maybe the original aircraft scheduled to do the route. But I don't know.
I mean, my suspicion is Newark Hong Kong is the next one to go 77W to be part of the rotation.
I'm honestly surprised that the announcement wasn't.
It wasn't already, yeah.
Yeah, I am very surprised.
You're competing with Cathay. I mean, there's so many reasons to do that. I agree with you. The only reason I can think of is that it's a utilization thing, and that's, you know, one of the longest routes in the network.
Yeah.
With the, you know, with the flight times and the ground times and this and that, you need more aircraft to make that work. And they will get four more next year or this year.
Yeah, this year they're coming. They'll be here soon. Yeah, I don't know what the other route. I mean, the only routes I can remember from LA that they don't fly anymore are Auckland, Frankfurt, and Hong Kong.
Didn't they have LA, Sao Paulo?
I don't think so.
And that route has proven, like, so challenging for so many airlines over the years. It cannot support itself. It needs feed. And arguably some of that feed comes from Asia, but
maybe it's LA Carlsbad.
Oh my gosh.
Do you guys see the thing I found about Carlsbad?
Yes.
One of my readers forwarded that to me. It's nuts. So the short version is Carlsbad Airport put out their updated master plan to cover the next 30 years. And they think that there's an airline supposedly has applied and been approved. And in the next month is going to announce 12 daily flights of a 64-seat jet, which I'm reasonably certain no commercial airplane in the United States is 64 seats. But
what they haven't told you is the airline in question is ExpressJet, rising from the ashes of Phoenix.
I think it's Allegiant.
I guess Allegiant would put 64 seats in an ERJ-145.
Exactly. No. I would do it on a CR-2.
CR-2, go five across.
No flight attendant. And one of the pilots is a blow-up dummy. I'm a terrible person. I'm gonna get. Don't email me if you work for Allegiant.
Please at him. The 64 seat thing was weird. It was applied and they expected to start in late 2017 and it should happen soon. There's some weird things in that report that didn't quite line up, but reading it was very amusing to me. And we've talked about this with the Caljet in the last couple. I don't remember if it's in any of our recordings, but I know we've talked about it recently and how it sort of seems to like maybe work. Right, Stephen, you're saying it seems like there's like people flying it.
Yeah, I mean, last time I was in Las Vegas, it was that whole gate area. They were waiting for that flight, and it was pretty busy. So
yeah,
which is impressive for them.
Yeah, I mean, I people who live out there keep saying we want it, we want it, we want it, we need more like this. I just don't know if there's enough, you know, of the routes that can be filled to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow,
well, I think that's a show, guys.
Absolutely,
let's wrap it up. This is Steven signing off for Dots, Lines, and Destinations. You can find us on Twitter at Dots, Lines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment, send us an email, tweet us. Happy to hear from you, you listeners. So
until... He means that especially for those of you who are concerned about the Allegiant service.
No, no, don't. Please. yeah. Thanks for listening and happy travels.
Nice.
I actually couldn't stop laughing to say goodbye.
I'm so glad I'm done recording.